We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
We started thinking, okay, how are we going to get in front of this customer? Because she's not looking for beauty in the same way. She's not avidly trying to figure this out. She's fine by definition. And when she experiences Birchbox, she realizes it can be better without a lot of work. So the partnership with Walgreens was really about us saying, okay, we want to go and be where that customer is. And we, and I really believe this for all e-commerce businesses, we need to diversify and think about, you know, being in every channel. Because if we believe that there's a huge opportunity to be the first ever beauty retailer focused on this consumer, that's what we believe. No one's ever focused on her. We believe we can create the destination, then we have to think multi-channel.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. My next guest was an early disruptor in the beauty industry who used data to create highly personalized experiences in a new way. Katia Beecham is the co-founder and CEO of Birchbox, the beauty company known for pioneering the subscription box model. The company recently announced a partnership with Walgreens and opened its very first bricks and mortar location. In just a moment, we'll talk to Katia about the evolution of the brand and the opportunity in its future. Joining me today as my co-host is my colleague and my friend, Chris Stewart. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Bill. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic.
Why?
Super excited to be here talking to Katia.
That's a good start.
Yes.
And where are we here?
We are here at NRF 2019 Retail's big show.
The Javits Center.
At the Javits Center.
With 40,000 of our closest friends.
40,000 people, 700 exhibitors, 100 hours of content.
Yes.
It's an exciting time to be in retail. And it's an exciting time to be in New York, even though it is freezing outside.
But it's sunny in here.
It is.
It is sunny in
and
here.
And warm.
It is.
Ish.
It's a glass room that is pretending that the elements are not there.
I think it's only warm because I'm wearing long underwear. I've worn it every day since I've arrived.
Good to know.
Yeah. So anyway, Katia, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you.
We're really excited to be here. Well, we're excited that you're here. So tell us a little bit about Katia Beecham. Where did you start? How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I'm from El Paso, Texas, originally. I moved up to the Northeast for college and I studied economics and international studies. And then I started my career in finance. When I, you know, was in finance and a young person, I felt like there was something more for me. I felt like I had more to give, you know, a naive 26 and 27 year old thinking like, why aren't I getting to share my ideas?
Right.
And I went to business school. I luckily got into Harvard Business School. And from there, I learned about entrepreneurship because honestly, I really hadn't been exposed to it in El Paso. In El Paso, you know, it's more traditional careers like doctor, lawyer, teacher, you know, professionals like that. And it just, I remember sitting in class and just hearing about basically the trials and tribulations of how hard it was because at HBS during my years, the curriculum was like 90% of the cases that you followed were failures. And I mean like epic failures.
Right.
And I remember just leaning in and thinking, I want to experience that. And I was just very, really motivated to find out what I was capable of. And then kind of became laser focused on how could I get to become an entrepreneur? This enigmatic idea that I think a lot of people think about. And luckily, the next year, my co-founder and I were thinking about, you know, all of these entrepreneurs coming on campus that were some women starting companies for a female consumer. Like finally, the women were starting companies for their consumer. And we were just planning on writing a business plan. And we were thinking, what should we write a business plan about? What industry really hasn't been discussed? And beauty just kind of slapped us in the face because it's a $500 billion industry. It had not been disrupted since it went from department stores to specialty stores like Sephora and Ulta. And only 2% of beauty sales in 2010 were sold on the internet. And we just thought, wow, this one feels obvious. It must be pretty hard since no one's really focusing on it. And then, you know, we went from there. We just got so excited. Within about 2 days, we came up with a business model that was a personalized subscription paired with content, paired with e-commerce. So you could discover, learn, and buy in one encapsulated experience rather than what we were, you know, hearing people say, which was it was too hard. You're kind of like reading a magazine, folding it down. You're reading a blog post. This was pre like huge things happening on, you know, Instagram or YouTube was still, you know, just small idea of like beauty bloggers. So we were like, this feels so frictionful. And like, we're smart. We're, you know, smart women. We feel like this category is way too confusing and we don't want to spend our time trying to figure it out. We just want to have a good experience purchasing beauty. And that's how we came up with the idea. And honestly, it both feels like it's been so much time and no time at all.
Really?
So talk, can you talk a little bit about, so you had this great idea, but it, you didn't have your own brands that you were going to be able to put into this box.
No.
So can you talk a little bit about the brand buy-in and how did you go after that? And
yeah, sure. So we did not have contacts at brands. Neither of us were from the beauty industry. I was in commercial real estate investment banking and my co-founder was a consultant, a management consultant. So basically we looked at brands that we thought were very, you know, very relevant, very cool. And we cold emailed them. And I had had success cold emailing before. Right when I got into HBS, I cold emailed Steve Jobs.
Successfully. Wow.
Because
successfully.
Yeah.
Just aim high.
Because I just couldn't, believe, you know, you get marketing when you get in and they're trying to tell you like prepare for school. And they were advertising an IBM ThinkPad for like this, you know, half price to HBS students and a deal through Harvard. And I emailed Steve Jobs saying like, wouldn't you want these people to use your machines? And why aren't you giving us a deal too? And, you know, it was a short email, but he responded and I did. I had one of the only Apples on campus and he gave me the same deal as they gave us for the IBM.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you were destined for greatness, Kavya. It was written.
That's outstanding.
In the stars.
So I used the same approach, I guess,
sure.
For brands. And that's the early days. It was really basic. We just said, you know, we have an idea. We know it's going to work. Here's why we think you should be involved and why you should care. Will you help give us advice on the idea? And that got us meetings and got us in the room where we learned more about their pain points and, you know, shaped the offering more to brands. And then from there, we were able to secure enough brands to test it. And honestly, the test went well. And of course, you know, as entrepreneurs, you're so optimistic, you extrapolate the heck out of a test.
Right.
And, you know, that was honestly the hardest part of the company for probably the first 5 years was there was so much consumer demand and consumers were so ready to do something very different, which actually everyone said no consumer would do. Everyone's first, you know, response, brand, investor was consumers will not pay for samples. Samples are free. That was everybody's first response. But consumers, you know, were saying over and over again, we will pay for samples when they are great samples, personalized for me. Like they absolutely saw the value in it. And obviously it's a low price. It's $10 a month. And so eventually, you know, we were able to get brands to start shifting their marketing dollars in this direction. But honestly, it was really hard because brands, you know, plan far in advance and they think of sampling in this one very specific way, which I think of as a loyalty tool. And we were for the first time saying, well, what if we could use a sample as a customer acquisition tool?
Yeah.
You know, something that somebody's getting without asking for it. You know, typically a sample in beauty is used as a gift with purchase. So that already means you're a customer,
right?
And so we were trying to say, you know, well, we're surprising customers, but it's personalized. This can actually be a very cost-effective, ROI positive way of acquiring customers.
So the companies that provide you with the samples, do you track, can they track like what the
return is?
You're right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge part of it. So we work with massive companies that are, you know, Estee Lauder companies, L'Oreal companies. And then we also work with very small independent brands. And a big part of the value add is that frankly, we are one of the pioneering ways that they have been able to track what the value is of a sample. So because prior it was just handed out, and it was very hard to understand what was happening.
Right.
They didn't even, I mean, in many cases have a lot of benchmarking around what was the return on investment. So yes, that's a really big part of what we do. And we track it in every way you can, of course, imagine. We're looking at, you know, was this a new customer? Did they have a favorable impression? And then we're tracking over time what happens because just like any marketing, in some cases, you have to get in front of customers a few times.
Right.
So we're looking at, you know, is this sample what we call a high converter? And then what happens when we get you in front of that brand again in the next few months? Like, are you becoming a customer of that brand? Is it really just one product that's converting people? So we're really a data partner to all of our partners, helping them understand who's the customer, what's the most efficient way to get in front of them. And
I would assume when you started, it was kind of like trying to sell companies on this idea.
Yes.
And now I assume that it is, please go away. We'll call you. We'll look at it, but come back in 6 months.
You know, we are inundated. I would say we're never like, please go away, because we have found some gems and things that, you know, are so unexpected. I've heard from people who are from the industry, I'm not from the industry, that they've never seen a merchandising team. That's our team that works directly with the brands, see so many brands in a single year. So we actually do look at everything, because in some cases there's a really great product that has just bad branding and that like just isn't going to appeal to consumers. So we work with brands to rebrand it and to make it feel like more relevant right now. So we do look at a lot. I mean, yes, we are inundated, but we do try to look, because there are some great entrepreneurs in the beauty industry that have, you know, really cool ideas, and we want access to that. This is all about, for the consumer, making it really easy to discover the best things. Right. And there's always new things coming out in beauty. So that's our job, is to kind of do the hard work for them and then get them in front of the product.
It's funny, you mentioned that you guys are working closely in terms of branding, and I was wondering if you've seen any difference in sampling business plans, almost.
Oh,
where
God.
Like, and are you seeing that as a result of Birchbox?
Yes.
and the work that you guys have been doing? And
absolutely.
Now other, you know, you
sample
guys are
manufacturers, like, you know, are just very happy with us.
sure.
Expanding and have come to us with really great deals. So that's one of the benefits we offer to partners, is that we've kind of pre-negotiated a lot of like big runs on mini tubes and aerosol spray cans. And, you know, we know that we can get the best price, obviously hitting a quantity threshold, but we are helping small brands who were doing these little runs basically spend a lot of times the same money to get so much more sampling out.
So you have created a partnership with Walgreens.
Yes.
What is that?
Yeah. So
I know what Walgreens is, but I mean, what is the partnership?
You've heard of them. So basically, in 2014, we started to look at like who was our customer? Was it different from anybody else in the industry? And we had a pretty big aha moment at the company, which is we were going after a very different customer than who the entire beauty industry has and does focus on, which is the beauty industry is very focused on a consumer who really loves beauty as a passion. You could almost call it like obsessed, right? Small percentage of customers who show so much enthusiasm spend a very disproportionate amount of their share of wallet, you know, on beauty. And we were attracting this other customer who represents the average woman and has a casual relationship with beauty, but still consumes a lot of beauty.
Sure.
So basically we realized, okay, well, the entire industry is focused on a very small percentage of the market who overspend. And we are naturally attracting a consumer who has a more casual relationship, doesn't spend as much. But our data showed us that when she joined Birchbox, within a year, she doubled her spend in beauty. So she has an ability to, you know, spend a little bit more, even if she's never going to become passionate. So we started thinking, okay, how are we going to get in front of this customer? Because she's not looking for beauty in the same way.
Right.
She's not avidly trying to figure this out. She's fine by definition. And when she experiences Birchbox, she realizes it can be better without a lot of work. So the partnership with Walgreens was really about us saying, okay, we want to go and be where that customer is. And I really believe this for all e-commerce businesses, we need to diversify and think about, you know, being in every channel. Because if we believe that there's a huge opportunity to be the first ever beauty retailer focused on this consumer, that's what we believe. No one's ever focused on her. We believe we can create the destination. Then we have to think multi-channel. We have to think about serving her offline and online and who's the right partner. And when we started talking to the Walgreens team, I mean, obviously they serve this customer. She's in there. She's like casually buying her beauty when she's doing other things. That's kind of the trend with this consumer. She does it while she's doing something else.
Right?
It's not a destination for her. When we told them about the casual beauty consumer and about our passion to create the destination, it's just never resonated with the team as much as it did with them. And they were like, yes, we want to do this. Let's pilot it. So what we're doing right now is a pilot that is in 6 and it's going to be in 11 stores in a few more months, where we are with the customer in real life. You can build your own sample Birchbox. You can also shop an assortment of full-size products. It's pretty large. And you can experience Birchbox in real life like we have given customers. We had a store in New York City and in France, and we've done so many pop-ups. So now we're testing that with Walgreens in real life. And then we have a digital partnership as well. And in the next coming months, there's going to be more tests of how to merge that physical and digital and see, you know, where do customers want to experience getting their monthly box? How do they want to experience choosing samples for that box? So it's really just about, again, learning, how are we going to be the destination for this woman who we feel has not been a priority of the industry, getting to the point of like this intersection of delight and efficacy. Like, she wants to get it done. It needs to be like efficient. but it's beauty. Right. Should be fun.
Sure.
So that's what we're working on with them. And we believe that this is a multi-billion dollar opportunity to become her home.
This is interesting because, you know, we're talking a lot about disruption and rethinking your business model and being willing to, you know, shake up those sacred cows of your organization.
Yes.
And I think a drugstore is a pretty natural partnership for you guys, right? I mean,
I think so.
I would definitely call myself on that very casual end of the casual beauty consumer. I go into the Walgreens.
You have an on-point eyeliner because I couldn't do anything that
very much
straight.
Awesome.
I'm not good at that.
Me neither.
But okay, so I go into Walgreens and I'm there and I'm picking up my, you know, this Band-Aids and, you know, lotion. Yep. And ooh, I'm going to get some mascara. I love mascara. I'm going to buy some mascara. It's very exciting. What about those uncommon partnerships? Are you thinking about that? Or what are you seeing that's kind of making you excited out there?
No, we are. I wish I could share some of the things we're working on for 2019. It's a little early. But yes, sure. We are. I think, you know, what everyone's thinking about in retail is how do you make the physical world something that is so memorable?
Yeah.
Where people just start to feel like they understand what you're about. And at Birchbox, we really think so much about translating like our passion for the customers into something that's scalable. It's hard, right? Because when you're making like, you know, hundreds of thousands of like little tiny packages, it's really hard for, you know, how are you going to show customers you care? And in the real world, those are the opportunities. And I think what everyone's thinking about in physical retail is, you know, how can you get people to want to spend time and like come to this place?
Yeah.
And that is 100% what we're thinking about too. What would make a customer who's not obsessed with beauty get value out of coming to a place that's about beauty, right? Like what would make them want to do that?
Right.
And then, yes, we have to think about interesting, different kinds of partnerships.
And where is your customer already? I'm thinking about that DSW concept that they talked about last year where they've got nail salons in some of their stores. And it's brilliant, you know? And I was just thinking recently, you know, I'm a commuter. I take the train from Baltimore to DC 4 days a week. There should be a train car that's like half nail salon, maybe half gym. It might be difficult to run on a treadmill on the train, but
it would be impossible.
Well, you know, seatbelts.
No, Bike. You're right. It's intriguing to me. We've learned, you know, heard for so long about the death of retail, the retail apocalypse, mall zombies, whatever. It's been incredibly difficult for us to help change that narrative. The negative is so easy to kind of glom onto and it just becomes clickbait and they just, you know, the headlines drive you nuts. And then you read the article. That's like, the article's pretty good. The headline sucks.
Right.
And so to see these partnerships, you're seeing more of that, I think.
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing is a fair reconciliation of the fact that consumers should be at the center of the equation for all of us, right? Everyone who serves a consumer and, you know, consumers are just in power in a way. They can really decide what's going to happen. And I think people equated that with the death of retail rather than thinking, well, what if we reimagined what physical experience could be so that, you know, it shows that we are considering how the consumer wants to spend their time.
Sure.
Right? Instead of just saying, this is what we got, consumers, come.
Right.
Right? Which is, you know, there had been a lack of, I'd say, like innovation and the fact that, you know, this is what we have. This is where you can buy
it. You didn't have to worry about it.
Right? And the way that we think about it is like everything is going to start to be about this intersection of efficacy and delight. I mean, the doctor, the dentist, you're seeing it happen everywhere, right? It's no longer like, oh, well, you just have to get this thing done. So you have to, it has to be unenjoyable.
Right.
You're starting to see that like everything
you just need to get that at the MVA.
So much more enjoyable. So I think it makes sense, but I think it's almost the inverse. You know, people who are thinking about just the power of what you can do in real life and those human connections you can make and create like loyalty and affinity. I mean, no offense, internet, but there's no place you can do that like on the internet.
Right.
Human connections is how that kind of depth of like, I am going to be a part of this. You know, that's really what happens. And that's honestly the arbitrage I think Birchbox found was that people were starting in 2010 to receive so many emails that they stopped opening them. And we literally were like, what about the postal service? You know, like, isn't it so fun to get like a package in the mail? And honestly, people just absorbed every element of it, every word on the card, every product. And it was just so like special to get a package that was a surprise.
And full of lovely little things.
Cut through all the clutter.
Yes.
You know, and I think, I really do think that we very early on saw the power of how you can do things in real life. And but honestly, we're also still surprised how much we believe that physical retail can just deepen that relationship and create something that is long lasting for a new kind of consumer driven business.
I think it's brilliant. I mean, you've got to do that. And it's so interesting to me where you see what was once, you know, pure online, now opening stores.
For sure.
And the stores really working hard to get the online right.
Yeah.
And so it's this really interesting way of looking at retail and its evolution and the revolution, because it's happening at a pace that I don't think anybody could have imagined.
Yes, it's definitely just being facilitated by every other startup that's thinking about like the tools you need and how easy are we going to make it to get the real estate, and everything is just changing so quickly, it's hard to keep up.
So we are running short on time, and I'm sorry about that, because this has been incredibly interesting. You are brilliant, by the way. I think that, you know, when I think about Birchbox, when I think about what you all have done and kind of the pioneering way that you got it done, and now you see all of these subscription boxes, and you've got to be really proud of yourself. That is, you know, you took a risk, and it's really paying off. And but it's not just paying off like in a money sense.
ROI,
it's
yeah.
paying off in a, you know, gosh, look at what we've done. We've actually created something that other people are now copying and having success with.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's definitely surreal to think about, but we also feel like it's early innings. You know,
yeah.
I think in some ways, we still feel that there's a lack of understanding of what we're talking about, which is a shift that companies are going to be able to make from focusing on what was, you know, used to be considered like the primary consumer and secondary consumers. I think one of the biggest changes in retail is going to come from every category's casual consumer.
Yeah.
Because now you can use technology and algorithms and, of course, so much to help that, you know, consumer that was not passionate consume like someone who is passionate.
Exactly.
And that I think it's going to be a very interesting time to watch.
It's always an interesting time in retail.
Always is.
So we have a portion of the program that you may not be familiar with, and it's called Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
So what we're going to do is we're going to ask you a series of questions, and you're just going to answer with the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Do not overthink it. As a matter of fact, don't think at all.
I'll do my best.
All right. If you're ready, Chris, start us off.
What's the last print magazine that you read?
Economist.
See, I said brilliant. There's a reason for that. I think I've seen one.
Got some pictures on the
front.
What's
the one thing that is always in your refrigerator?
I'm salsa, hot sauce salsa.
What is the best piece of advice you ever received?
Don't accept no from someone who can't say yes.
Nice. I see the headline for this blog post. burgers or pizza?
Pizza.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Never.
I'm so with you.
Never. On tacos, sometimes. Al pastor tacos, a little pineapple, perfect.
Not
on pizza.
Fruit on anything. Katya, if people want to learn more about Birchbox, where should they go?
Birchbox.com. You can follow us on Instagram also. You can visit us on Facebook. But you can get a hold of me. People reach out to me all the time. I'm getting those cold emails.
Go right to
too.
The start.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. I'm looking forward to the book. I know there's a book in the future. It's coming.
Who knows? Who has time for book writing?
No, come on. You're going to do a book. It's coming.
You're not sleeping anyway.
Yeah, really. Katya, thank you so much for being a part of Retail Gets Real. And Chris, thank you once again for being a co-host.
Always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. I appreciate you taking the time. And thank you for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. We're going to post more information about the topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes. Thanks for listening. And if you like Retail Gets Real, tell your friends, tell your colleagues, tell your family. I don't know, just tell people. Or at the very least, give us a rating on your podcast app. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.